The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Well, welcome back. Wednesday, October 16th, 2019. If you watched the Democratic Party debate last night or heard it, I'd love to know what you thought. I will tell you, I think we are at an existential moment in our country. I know a lot of people have said that about previous elections, but somewhere, 1980, I think, was one. So too, 1860, 1864. But in none of those elections was socialism, the alien political philosophy we have deployed almost all our energy to defeating abroad whenever we took up arms or foreign policy energy for going, on something like 110 years. And none of those elections were we facing the strong possibility of adopting it for and to ourselves. But of course, as Leo Strauss once put it, it would not be the first time that a nation defeated on the battlefield and, as it were, annihilated as a political being has deprived its conqueror of the most sublime fruit of victory by imposing on him the yoke of his own thought. Even worse, it may be the first time that a nation or series of nations defeated on the battlefields, annihilated as political beings, actually posthumously were able to impose the yoke of their thought on the victors, us. You go through the transcript of the debate last night, the word freedom comes up from 12 candidates in 3 hours. That word freedom comes up a total of 7 times. Once in the context of taking away Second Amendment rights, the rest in the service of the phrase reproductive freedom. For example, Cory Booker said he wants to open an office of reproductive freedom in the White House. That'll solve a lot of our problems, won't it? Can I just say one thing about that issue before I go where I wanted to? Anyone, including any child who learns what abortion actually is, knows that calling it reproductive freedom is beyond Orwellian. It's ending life or ending fetus freedom. It's certainly not about reproduction. And while on Orwell and this issue, when Kamala Harris yells that she wants to take government's hands off women's bodies, I hope she understands her position is to empower just the opposite of that. It's the pro-life movement that is about keeping hands off bodies, not doing certain procedures, be it on the mother or the child or the fetus. Orwellian, they get away with this and they get cheered. Regardless of where you are on the issue, it's a perversion, or really reversion, of the English language. Anyway, back to freedom and the existentialism at stake here. The existentialism we face right now is, as Ronald Reagan once put it, a choice between up or down. Up to a man's age-old dream, the ultimate in individual freedom consistent with law and order, or down to the ant heap of totalitarianism. And regardless of their sincerity, their humanitarian motives, those who would trade our freedom have embarked on this downward course, as Reagan put it. Allow me to share a few quotes from another presidential debate using the words freedom. May I? Quote, I happen to believe that the federal government has usurped powers of autonomy and authority that belong back at the state and local level. It has imposed on the individual freedoms of the people, and there are more of these things that could be solved by the people themselves, close quote. Quote, I'm offering a promise for less government and less taxes and more freedom for the people, close quote. Or try this quote using the word freedom from the same year in a presidential debate. Quote, I've always believed that this land was placed here between two great oceans by some divine plan, that it was placed here to be found by a special kind of people, people who had a special love for freedom, who had the courage to uproot themselves and leave hearth and homeland and come to what, in the beginning, was the most undeveloped wilderness possible. We came from 100 different corners of the earth. We spoke a multitude of tongues. We landed on this eastern shore and then went out over the mountains and the prairies and the deserts, and then the far western mountains to the Pacific, building cities and towns and farms and schools and churches. If wind, water, or fire destroyed them, we built them again. And in so doing, at the same time, we built a new breed of human called an American, a proud and independent and a most compassionate individual, for the most part. 200 years ago, Tom Paine, in the 13 tiny colonies were trying to become a nation, said we have it in our power to begin the world over again. Today, we're confronted with the horrendous problems that we've discussed here tonight. And some people in high positions of leadership tell us that the answer is to retreat, that the best is over, that we must cut back, that we must share in an ever-increasing scarcity, that we must, in the failure to be able to protect our national security as it is today, we must not be provocative to any possible adversary. Well, we, the living Americans, have gone through four wars. We've gone through a Great Depression, and that literally was worldwide and brought us to our knees. But we came through all of these things, and we achieved even new heights and new greatness. The living Americans today have fought harder, paid a higher price for freedom, and done more to advance the dignity of man than any people who lived on this earth, close quote. Those last real quotes on freedom from the mouth of Ronald Reagan in 1980, first from his debate with Jimmy Carter, and second from his debate with John Anderson. That's how you talk about freedom here. It's not about taking rights away. And that's what's at stake here in this upcoming election. Nothing short of it. If you want to talk about the separation of powers or the First Amendment or the Second Amendment or the Fourth and Fifth Amendments or perversions of the 14th Amendment, you're pretty soon going to find yourself without any semblance of what so many thought America was, is, or was about, or is about. Nationalize health care, raise taxes to do it, strip away rights of free speech and religion, take away Second Amendment rights punitively, no less, end innocence until proven guilty, and the right to fair trials and fair indictments and investigations, and further instill the use of race, gender, or transgender as a means for judging everything from job applications to promotions to educational opportunities. That's what you're going to get with this party. Let me try a few more quotes with you if I could. Quote, a constitution of government once changed from freedom can never be restored. Liberty once lost is lost forever. Close quote. Quote, since the general civilization of mankind, I believe there are more instances of the abridgment of the freedom of the people by gradual and silent encroachments of those in power than by violent and sudden usurpations. Close quote. Those two quotes come from John Adams and James Madison, respectively. Now, a question. I don't expect too many of our lawmakers or elected officials to actually know those quotes, but what about the sentiment of them? What you heard last night was the exact opposite of those sentiments. And of course, did you know you also heard Joe Biden getting George Washington completely wrong in order to defend himself for his own purposes? Biden, speaking of the Ukraine situation with his family and the president, said, quote, George Washington worried on the first time he spoke after being elected president that what we had to worry about is foreign interference in our elections. It was the greatest threat to America, close quote. He, Biden, Mr. Brain, got that exactly wrong. What do I mean by exactly wrong? Well, he said that George Washington spoke about this the first time he spoke after becoming president. Nope. It was the last thing he said after two terms of being president, famously from his farewell address. May I repeat, farewell address, Mr. Biden. And by the way, it wasn't about foreign interference in our elections. It was about entanglements abroad. I sometimes think Joe Biden may actually know nothing. You do know his foreign policy credentials, right? He brags about them all the time. Of course, he was, as you know, from his mouth, the chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. But what was his record, this foreign policy genius? He opposed the killing of Osama bin Laden. He opposed the first Gulf War, you know, the one with our lightning victory against the invasion of Kuwait. But he supported the second Gulf War, the one we're still bogged down in. He was a fierce opponent of the Strategic Defense Initiative, which helps keep us safe to this day and broke Gorbachev's will to oppose Reagan. And he helped yank aid from the South Vietnamese. Even today, as he criticizes Donald Trump for leaving the Kurds high and dry, just remember what he did to the South Vietnamese. He also opposed funding the Contras in deference to the Soviet and Cuba-backed Sandinistas. Finally, a word as I bring up the issue with the Kurds. I'm not really with the president on his position and stance, but I would like to ask my fellow Democrats a few things, as well as the general commentariat. Where were they when President Obama abandoned, after serious threats and red lines, so many Syrians, indeed hundreds of thousands of them slaughtered in Aleppo and elsewhere? Where were they? That was a scale of abandonment, also inviting the Russians in, by the way. That makes the current problem with the Kurds look like a matchbox on a football field. And where were the Democrats in General Commentariat when we abandoned the Cambodians and South Vietnamese in the 1970s? They were cheering, is what they were doing then. I'm just a little tired of these latter-day hawks, the Democrats who have abandoned human rights and ally after ally on massive scales while leaving too much of the world a humanitarian dumpster fire. But in any event, folks, the theme of this country is freedom, and that's nothing you heard about last night. In fact, you heard about its constriction. You elect it, and you will read someday about its finale. I'm Seth Leibson. We'll be right back. Listen to Don Williams. Wow, what a voice. Love that voice. Gentle giant. If you're feeling run down, don't have the energy that you used to, it's probably because you're not eating enough fruits and vegetables. I started my commitment to Balance of Nature, and I'm following the footsteps of my friend and radio colleague, Sebastian Gorka, who's been with Balance of Nature for months now. Seb can tell us a little bit more about his experience.
Seth, one thing you're going to notice is you're not going to get sick as much. You're going to find you go to the office and everybody around you all might have a cold. Maybe you used to be the first person in the office to get a cold. Now you're not even going to get the cold anymore. It's like you have a protective immunity bubble around you.
Thank you, Sebastian. Experience the Balance of Nature difference for yourself. Balance of Nature is now offering a 35% discount and free shipping on your first preferred order of Balance of Nature. This offer may end at any time, so don't wait to start Dr. Howard's Health Challenge. Call 800-246-8751. That's 800-246-8751. Or go to balanceofnature.com and use discount code BALANCE. Smitty's in Scottsdale. Smitty, I had a feeling I might hear from you today. Do we have you there, buddy? Smitty?
Yeah.
There you are.
How are you?
I'm fine. How are you? I was just saying I had a feeling I might hear from you today.
That's hilarious. Did you speak with Tina?
Did I speak with Tina?
Yeah, I gave Tina. I support all your sponsors, by the way. Finance of America, Benefit Air, Cool Touch. And I just called Tina Borges. Gorgeous, and she came out, and she's saving me a lot of money.
Oh, that's great. Thank you, Smitty. I appreciate that. I really do.
And
I sincerely do.
We spoke about you, so maybe she's listening. So I wanted to say something about the debate last night.
Please do.
And if a picture's worth a thousand words, please note there were no American flags behind the candidate.
Oh, my gosh, what a great point. What a great point. Yeah,
and,
note that. Note that well.
So that goes along with what the left accuses the president of. They're doing themselves, and they're quick to say, oh, he's unpatriotic, et cetera.
Yeah.
We all know how patriotic he is.
You bet.
So no flags. It's pretty clear from these candidates that why we have the impeachment nonsense going on, and that's because it's very none of these are going to stand up against President Trump. And so they need to disqualify him in some way before the election, or they know they're going to lose. And I think I saw something on Facebook. I reposted it, and I'd like to say this to anyone who doesn't understand what's going on. It's a small group of power-hungry Democrats in a secret room, in a secret process, without transparency, are trying to take away the voice and vote of 63 million Americans that duly elected President Trump.
I love that. Period. That is concise. I love that. I'm going to clip that and play that again and again on this show, Smitty. But I have a question for you. I didn't want to interrupt you if you had more, but I do have a question for you, so don't go before I get to ask you. But go ahead if you had a little more.
And I would say that anybody who thinks it doesn't resemble a coup more than an impeachment isn't paying attention.
Thank you, Smitty. So a question for you.
Yes,
I agree with you totally about watching that stage last night and thinking, I'm glad I'm on the Republican team, you know, going into 2020. You had been, as memory serves, much more worried a few months back than it sounds like you are today based on.
No.
Not true. Okay, go ahead. Good.
I'm still concerned. I'll tell you, the most articulate and I would almost call him, I don't want to use the word brilliant, brightest speaker on that stage, in my view, is Beto O'Rourke.
Was he better than Buttigieg, you thought?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Buttigieg is close. He's close.
Okay.
But Beto takes two words that come out of Buttigieg's mouth and bang, he's off on a rant and he's got his thoughts together. Unfortunately, he's on the wrong side of the issues, but that's very frightening that somebody who's that good, that's really, it's going to be hard for people who are uninformed to distinguish what he's talking about from, you know, the reality of our constitutional rights and what all this stuff means.
But you don't really expect him to even win a state, though, do you?
No, I'm concerned. Again, I'm just concerned about the. We talk about who controls the narrative. Again, I don't see any strides, any improvements on the GOP side, the White House side of improving the narrative, taking the bully pulpit. I see Jim Jordan and Mark Meadows every night on Fox. On Fox.
Yeah.
That's great, but they're preaching to the choir.
Yes.
So, but every time I look at Fox, I see the Pelosi-Schumer press conference being covered.
Also true. To be fair to Jim Jordan, I saw him on CNN last Sunday for extended period. He is willing to go when they invite him.
When they invite him.
Yes, when. Good qualifier. Good point. Yeah.
We need to take advantage of the bully pulpit. We need to do it with regularity. And somebody made the point, I don't know who it was, I think it was a Democrat, former congressman, one of these consultant types, who said, I just like to know what the president is thinking before he takes action, like pulling troops back from Syria. And to listen to him talk about, we moved 28 troops,
right.
28 soldiers.
Right.
That's what this is being blown up out of proportion about. And it would have been so much better to have headed it, I don't know the right word.
If we could have headed off at the pass, yeah, or been a little prepared.
Headed off at the pass and come out on 6 o'clock news and say, from the White House, the president, in his own words, I'm going to pull back 28 soldiers and get them out of harm's way because the Turkey-Syria border is not our call, but I'm ready to crush Turkey economically if they step over the line.
So, Smitty, let me say a couple things on that real quick. First of all, your sentiment is well taken. I don't have the liberty to use this person's name, but let's just say he's a strong supporter of Donald Trump with excellent foreign policy credentials, who does a lot of supporting of Donald Trump from the outside. And he said none of us were prepared for what the White House did when they did this. We were caught, shocked. Second.
Of course.
Yeah. Second, the White House has now released the letter that the president sent to Erdogan. It's a good letter. It's not long. Let me just give you the first two sentences, okay? Dear Mr. President, let's work on a deal. You don't want to be responsible for slaughtering thousands of people, and I don't want to be responsible for destroying the Turkish economy, and I will. I've already given you a little sample with respect to Pastor Brunson. That's a good start. Just too bad we weren't prepared. Yeah, yeah, yeah. You can't do this kind of stuff unilaterally and expect defense from the outside. You just can't.
And you can't lead from behind. That letter had to go out first.
You bet. Well done, Smitty. Well done indeed. Talk soon, buddy. I'm Seth. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. If it is 34 past the hour, it's time for our culture and economy update with the wonderful John Dombrowski from Grand Canyon Planning. His website, grandcanyonplanning.com. Hi, John. Happy Wednesday.
How's it going?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
Fantastic.
What's in the economy today? Looks like September September retail sales were a little weak, earnings a little bit weak.
Yeah, well we had September retail sales, fell for the first time in 7 months, actually. So that, again, raises a little bit of fears that, you know, the economy's slowing. But this is something we've talked about, obviously. Mm-hmm. But on the flip side of that, we've had some reporting of earnings. As of, you know, yesterday, we had a couple of good, some of the banks reporting good yesterday. We also had today Netflix reporting blowing out earnings. We had IBM reporting beating earnings. So we've got some positive things happening out there as well. But the outlook does, you know, remain a little bit tenuous out there when we see the retail sales falling, and they're looking at automobile sales falling as well as online sales. Of course, we're coming into the holiday season, and we're going to be watching this closely to see if people are really going to be spending money.
Yeah, obviously that's going to start ticking. When do we start watching that seriously? After Halloween or closer to Thanksgiving?
I would say probably throwing on into early first, second week of November.
Okay.
Yeah, before Thanksgiving, we start to see.
Do you and Mrs. Dombrowski do most of your Christmas and holiday shopping online or in retail stores? Yeah, I ask a serious question because
it's a good question.
I have noticed for a couple years now, some of these malls, they're just the emptiest places in the world.
You know, I just thought you were just trying to find out where I was going to be so you could bump into me.
Well, no, I'm sending you my sizes later, but. I have your email for that.
No, but you're right, Seth. That's very true. Some of the malls that we go into, we try to think and say, boy, how are they making it? It just looks like there's
no one.
How
are they making it?
Yeah, and you've got all these people employed there. They're standing around. And
right. It's got a 10-to-1 ratio.
But I guess based on, you know, the annual sales is what they're looking at. But oftentimes when you go in, we do see it's very slow in some of these malls. I try to do most of my shopping online if I can. That's just me because I'm busy and I just don't have time to be out there in the stores looking around for things. And I usually know what I want. So once you know what you want, it's easy to just go to a site and click on it and have it sent
right
to
your door. It's amazing how easy it is to do general shopping online.
It is.
You know, you can buy everything you need at home from paper towels to dog food online.
Yes.
And it's there that day or the next day.
You can get them delivered too now, some of these supermarkets and things. So it's pretty amazing, you know, to be able to take advantage of the technology like that. Some people still like the old-fashioned way, though.
One of the things I want to do with you, if I can, you and I will do a little homework for both of us here. So I want to work off the last Democratic debate last night, the one that took place last night.
Right.
I'm going to put together a list of economic proposals that we hear from these candidates.
Right.
And I would love to get your take on them, what they would mean for the economy, what they would mean for individuals themselves.
Love to do
Wouldn't
it
Wouldn't that
with
be
you.
Fun?
That'd be great.
I think that'd be
great.
A lot of fun.
Hey, I had an interesting meeting today, Seth.
Okay.
It was a couple, Richard and Mary, their first names. And they absolutely love you. Just wanted you to know
sweet.
That.
Thank you.
And they were very complimentary of you and myself. It was just a nice thing. You know, and the one thing they did say is that she said that she really enjoys the upbeat, banter that we have between us.
Well, it's important. I mean, you know, happiness is a moral obligation, as Dennis Prager puts it. And for some of us, it's a struggle. For me, it's sometimes harder than others. Other times to be happy, but for you, I've never seen. I sense it's you hit the floor running every morning.
I try to.
Yeah, no, yep. I can tell you do.
Yep. I love it. I do, and you know, I often talk to people about this how because everyone asks me, well, when are you going to retire? Right?
Yeah.
Because I'm there helping them with their retirement, and I, at the moment, have no plans to retire. Of course, it's my standard line, and that is true. But I did mention to someone today, I said, it would be kind of nice to wake up one day and not have to look at all of the, you know, the economy and the markets and what's happening, which is what I do constantly.
Yeah,
right.
Sure.
So I said it would be kind of nice one day to be able to wake up and not have to do those things. But no plan at this point.
Well, you know where they don't have the ticker, ticker? You know where they don't?
Where's that?
Papeete.
Oh, well, you know, I guess if they have Wi-Fi, you might still get
no
it on
Wi-Fi.
Your cell phone.
No, we're just having to go there with you. We'll take our best girls with us. We'll drink our green label and
there
we'll have a great
wow.
time.
Wow. That sounds like a plan to
okay,
me.
Buddy.
Wow.
All right.
Securities and Advisory Services offered to Client One Securities LLC, a member of FINRA and SIPC, and an investment advisor, Grand Canyon Planning Associates LLC, and Client One Securities LLC are not affiliated.
This song's for you, man.
I
it's
love
called
the music.
Gospel John.
Love
Gospel
it.
John. All right, buddy. We'll talk
Thank
to you,
you
soon.
All right.
Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. I was reminded that 46 years ago today, the great drummer Gene Krupa passed. He and Buddy Rich in the 50s and 60s made drumming, popular, what it is. They were two great drummers. There's a great video on YouTube of the two of them competing against each other. It's kind of a drum-off, if you will, with Sammy Davis Jr. in the background. It's a lot of fun. 1966, that was. But this is what made Gene famous, I believe. 1956 with Harry James. Sing, sing, sing. Just a little taste. Could listen to that all day. I could, anyway. But anyway, rest in peace continually to Gene Krupa and all those who made life better with their fabulous music. You know, America has a lot to contribute to the culture. People like to denigrate our culture as lowbrow, whether it's art or literature or indeed music. But when you look at the best of our art, the best of our literature, and the best of our music, including jazz or big band, as far as I'm concerned, well, I just think nothing's better. Nothing's better. You know, it was a fun trip I did once. Speaking of culture, I know that the pseudo-sophisticates in the art world like to think of Norman Rockwell's work as kind of lowbrow or pedestrian, if you will. I went to one of the things I really wanted to do, kind of a bucket list, really, was go to the Norman Rockwell Museum. It's out in Western Massachusetts. And boy, is it wonderful. If anyone in the audience has a chance to ever do that, it is wonderful. I saw a documentary on him once. It said he may not have painted America exactly as it was, but he painted America the way he wished he could see it. And I think that's a pretty good description of him. Of course, some of it was exactly as it was. He, of course, had that famous painting. You know the painting of Ruby Bridges? It's called, I think it's titled The Problem We All Live With, I think. Something very close to that, The Problem We All Live With. Bill, do you remember this painting? You know what? I'm going to get it. I'm going to order it and put it in this office. It's just such a stark reminder of what happened once upon a time in America. It's that little wonderful girl, Ruby Bridges, in the white dress, being escorted to a desegregated school in Louisiana, being escorted by U.S. Marshals. And what's beautiful about that picture is not what it depicts, the necessity of having to have U.S. Marshals escort a young woman to her place of education, to her school, as she's being pelted with tomatoes. It's a stark reminder. But the story of Ruby itself, if you go and read it, the interviews of her, you just see this proud girl in this white dress standing so perfectly erect, great posture. And in latter interviews, she said, I was praying for the people who were throwing stuff at us. I just thought, what a uniquely beautiful American sentiment. What a great, just everything about it just tugs at the heartstrings, some in the right direction, some in the wrong direction. There's a professor of psychology at Harvard named Robert Coles. I'm not sure if he's still alive. He may be. But he's the one who was studying this situation in Louisiana and how it was playing on the psyche of the children down there, desegregation. And he alerted to Norman Rockwell of his work, and he is the one who got Norman Rockwell to go down there and paint this painting ultimately and make Ruby Bridges a name that is probably not too well known now, but once upon a time was much better known. Wasn't ever as known as Rosa Parks, but maybe second tier. Read her story. It's a heck of a story. Heck of a story. Think about what we've been through as Americans over the years, over the decades, the challenges we've come to. And it just makes, you know, the kind of high dudgeon the Democrats are talking about that this president is engaging in, you know, his shredding of the Constitution, his clear and present danger to the United States of America and its future. It just makes it look like such small beer when you have a better understanding of the history of this country and what we have gone through constitutionally and legislatively and socially. I mean, we who study history, and plenty of people who are, I don't know, over the age of 70, maybe 75 at this point, they know what a big deal is. They have to know that what the Democrats are talking about vis-a-vis Donald Trump, it's just not. It's just not. And this is, I suppose, what happens to a country and perhaps a political party that either lost its way or doesn't know what to do with itself. You've heard me say before, worth repeating now, that great political parties or big political parties basically are formed around a big idea or several big ideas. You know, a group of people has an idea, several big ideas, and they form a political party around them to propel them. This now today, the Democratic Party, it seems like it's kind of lost the ideas and it's trying to find defenses for the continued existence of their party. It's kind of the opposite of what you do in creating a political party. I say this having watched them and listened to them for years and years and years, and especially the debate last night. You just wonder, you just have to wonder who you think they really are speaking for. People say, well, Seth, you're out to lunch. There's millions and millions, tens of millions of people who are going to vote for whoever the Democratic nominee is, just as they voted for Hillary Clinton. And I know that. I know that well. But I don't think they're voting for them. You cannot listen to either of the two leading candidates for the Democratic nomination, Joe Biden or Elizabeth Warren, last night. You cannot listen to them and feel that they have a firm grasp on what matters to you. You simply cannot. Joe Biden is floating around and flubbing line after line and historical point after historical point. And Elizabeth Warren, six times last night, six times, on the issue I think is probably one of the most important to Democratic Party voters, health care, six times dodged the question as to whether she will raise middle class taxes. Bernie's honest about it. Bernie's honest about it, saying, yes, taxes will go up. She dodges it again and again and again by the clever use of the word costs. When she's asked about taxes, she always starts, it's kind of getting to the point of annoying, she starts her sentence with the word so. She'll always say, so what I believe, or so what I want to do, or so. She will never answer the question in terms of the way it's asked, which is about taxes. She talks about costs. It's fundamentally dishonest. I'm Seth Leibson. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Seth Leibson Show. Susan's in Maricopa. Hi, Susan.
Hi, how are you?
I am well. How are you?
I'm excellent. I can't believe you started talking about art. You know, I listen to you every day.
Aww.
And finally, you're talking about something I wanted to call.
Aw, I have a lot to say about art. Did you know Harold Bloom just died? Speaking of art, are you familiar with him?
Great
literary critic. More in the written word, literary critic. Of Yale. He was 89. He was kind of our David McCullough of literary writing, if you will.
Then no, because my focus is pretty much on the visual art.
Right,
and
right.
I have, you know, it's one of my pet peeves. First of all, I saw the Norman Rockwell exhibition here in Phoenix when it was here.
Yeah.
And one of my good friends from Seattle, we're both Russian Impressionist trained, which just means we haven't colluded with the Russians. We just studied traditional and really good principles of how to paint.
Nice.
So she came down and we went to the show expecting to just see sort of like flat posterized images. Like
right.
You see.
Right.
We were squealing. I have never been so enthusiastic about just about any show I was at.
I know.
Because his vibration of colors and the broken color he uses.
It's so good. It really, I think the art critics have done America a disservice by the way they've treated him, honestly.
But not only him. This is systemic. It's part of the culture war that we're in.
Yeah.
Because back in the 30s, they stopped teaching traditional sort of realistic painting and traditional like ways of looking at art, and they went from all the isms into minimalism, mm-hmm. into really nothingism.
Right.
I saw 38 canvases at the Chicago Institute with no gesso even on it, just hung there,
yeah,
just like numbered 1 through 38.
Yeah.
And that's what Thomas Wolfe writes about in the book The Painted Word, where he talks about this movement as it's sort of like this giant flushing of a toilet.
Yes.
Because yes, you, and not that I love some abstract art. In fact, when I've been a during some shows, I will give an abstract painting an award because it's the best painting, not because it is negative or dark or supposed. So like they think, the elites think that the only thing that's worth looking at is something that's dark and negative, as if that's profound. And if it's a homeless person painted realistically on the ground, you know, with crap all over them, oh, that's deep.
But, right. Right, of course, right. Andy Serino is deep, thoughtful, contemplative art. But yeah, right.
Yeah, but if you paint about something that's positive and
uplifting,
about
yeah,
forget it. They just poo-poo it. And so anyway, people should know there's a still vibrant realist.
Will you email me, Susan? I want to have you on for a half hour to talk about this. Can you email me?
All right, sure.
I'd like to. This is important, actually.
Thanks a lot.
We do say we do culture here. Art is culture. Please email me.
Yes,
and God bless
you.
Thank you.
Bye.
Rick and Charles, don't go away. Please, please, please don't. But we got to do the debates coming up with Constantine Courard. We'll be right back. Or Rick and Charles, call back. Either way, I want to talk to you.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, deliver the truth, whatever the cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.